Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino. On this episode, we talk with five-time TEDx speaker and expert on sound, Julian Treasure. He is an author and international speaker on sound and communication skills. His five TED Talks have been viewed over 150 million times, and his book, How to Be Heard, won both Audi and Sovos Awards for Best Business Audiobooks. His company, The Sound Agency, has been helping major global brands to improve their sound since 2003. His story is fascinating. Enjoy.
Great to meet you.
And you, indeed.
How's the UK today?
Well, I can't speak for all of it, but up here, off the north coast of Scotland, it's lovely. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, hey, it's great to meet you. And before we get into your very esteemed life and professional world, I want to know how you survived COVID. We're entering that post-pandemic period of our existence. How did you get through it, and how has it changed the way that you approach things now?
I don't travel as much as I used to, which is a blessing. I live in Orkney, which is an archipelago of islands off the north coast of Scotland. So it's fairly sparsely populated. And so I wouldn't say from the time that the pandemic struck, travel ceased, but otherwise I've been able to work perfectly well. I mean, my company, The Sound Agency, has been a virtual company for 8 years, 9 years. So nothing changed in terms of working practices there. And although speaking, which was a big part of my life, going around the world doing talks all over the place about the skills of speaking and listening, that moved online, virtual, and became a lot less. But that gave me the time to write a new book, which I'm very excited about because that's coming out next year. Just delivered it to the publishers. So, I think for authors, perhaps, and people like me, it's a kind of change of medium more than anything else, but not a change of focus. And I think communication is more important than it ever has been, because the COVID pandemic forced a lot of people into a lot of introspection. There have been a lot of silos of entrenched opinions, some very strange opinions gaining a lot of currency out there. And I think listening, especially to people we don't agree with, has never been more important. So it kind of redoubles my focus, really.
Yeah, that's well said. Did you have a lockdown going on where you were at? How did that work for you as far as like a government sanction kind of you can't go anywhere?
Oh, yeah. We've had in the UK, we had two major lockdowns.
I didn't know where you were at. I know sometimes it's provincial and I didn't know how that worked where you were at exactly.
Oh, that was nationwide. And
Yeah.
It was in place up here. And although Orkney didn't have any cases for quite a long time, eventually the virus got up here and went through the community. So, we experienced it pretty much the same as anybody else, except I suppose, up here with the density of population being so low, it's possible to get out and be away from people much more easily than if I were living in a tower block in London or something, where it's very difficult. And I can just imagine how oppressive that would have been being locked in, an apartment for weeks and weeks. So, I think we've been very lucky in that way.
So let's get to the heart and soul of exactly what you do on a daily basis for a living. I'm going to put you at a career day at a grade school, a bunch of third graders. One of the kids looks up and says, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" How do you answer that child?
I'm an author and a speaker and also an expert on sound and communication skills. And I run an audio branding company as well called The Sound Agency, which helps brands to make good sound. So I help both organizations and individuals to listen better and make better sound.
So the most important organ in your mission statement is the ears.
Totally.
So when you were in the third grade, what was your dream growing up? What did you want to become?
How old is third grade? We don't have that over here.
Well, it'd be about 10, 11 years old.
Oh, gosh. 10 or 11. I can't remember having you know, I went through the same as everybody else, all other boys as I knew anyway, sort of spaceman. I read a lot of science fiction even at that early age. Musician, I think, probably would have been up there.
Yeah.
I started playing really quite young and took up the drums at 13 and was playing in a band 2 years later and never stopped, really. So, yeah, I think it would have been possibly astronaut followed by musician.
Yeah.
And that never stopped.
It's the same strata. So talk to me a little bit about how you arrived at where you're at, this crossroads of speaking and having an audio company and being an author. Take me back to your childhood. What were these seeds that were planted into you that grew into who you are now?
Music, really. Listening avidly to music. I spent hours and hours, you know, in my bedroom, almost in the dark, with headphones on, worshipping a lot of artists in the 70s, this was. I listened really carefully to a lot of music. And that kind of attentive listening, I think, is something which helps you to be a good musician. I think most musicians do it, because if you're in a band or an orchestra, you have a particular kind of listening. You have to have multi-track listening. You have to listen to a lot of other things at the same time. If you're not doing that, if you're not listening to all of the other players, you're not doing a very good job and you're not responding correctly. And also, you have to listen very attentively. It doesn't stop. You're playing, and at the same time, your brain is processing the sound around you. And anybody who plays in the band knows, you know, there are those times when it just absolutely sits and everybody gets a goofy grin on their face and everybody just knows, hey, this is it. This is what we're here for. And I'm sure it's the same in a symphony orchestra. So music really developed my listening in that way. I then went off in a career in initially selling advertising space. Then I became an ad manager and then a publisher and then a marketing director of a publishing company. And then left that to launch my own business in 1988, which was a magazine publishing company, producing what you call custom publications. Over here in the UK, we call them contract magazines for brands. And that was for computer companies. So that took up 15 years of my life from 88 right through to 2003 when I sold it. But in the evenings, I was playing music or listening to music. And you know, it was very clear to me that the world didn't sound great a lot of the time. And it was bothering me all the way through that. So I gained a great deal of experience in how brands communicate, how they want to communicate, and what they want to say and how they work. In that time, and when I sold that business, I launched the sound agency to bring the two halves of me together, really, the listening half and the marketing half. So the question was, how does your brand sound? And the sound agency set about answering that and helping brands who really didn't think about sound very much. You know, they're very ocular, and we experience the world in five senses, not just one, but all their effort goes into how they look. So they have a big brand Bible, which is all about fonts and colors and logos, and everything is visual. They don't talk about sound, most of them, at all, which is mad, because when you walk in a shop or a hotel, or when you have an interaction on the telephone, or you go into a corporate HQ, or you have so many interactions, the sound around you affects you profoundly. So that was what I started out the sound agency with, really, was a lot of research to look at what I then isolated as the four effects of sound. And that was my first TED talk. That was what that was all about, the four effects of sound on us, on our bodies, on our feelings, on our cognition, and on our behavior, those four ways sound affects us. And so that's what the sound agency set out to do. And it ended up being a specialist, a very innovative specialist in designing soundscapes for people to be in physical spaces, very much retail, hospitality, those kind of industries. Shopping malls all over the Middle East, all over Europe, have got our soundscapes in them. It's not music. It's somewhere in between silence and music. It's designed to be a texture that's just really pleasant to be in. relaxing, not overstimulating, just really lovely. So a little bit like, you know, if you go in a room and the walls are white, you don't go, wow, look at the white walls. They're just doing a really nice job making the room feel clean and fresh and light and pleasant. So it's at that level, really. It's kind of background, ambient, but it has a huge effect. It increases dwell time. It increases sales. It increases satisfaction of everybody in the shop because people have a nicer time. And you know, that's not rocket science. If we enjoy something, we'll stay longer and then probably spend some more money and everybody's happy.
Yeah, for sure. I remember years ago, Neil Young was really upset with the advent of MP3 players and portable music. And he was really just not happy with the way that it sounded. It was degenerated and so watered down that he's worked really hard at that. That's what I just kept thinking about. I know it's not music, but I'm thinking about the purity of audio. And I remember him making quite a distinction with how that is perpetrated now.
Yes, I think he probably can stop his efforts now because high def sound is hugely popular now. And you know, if you subscribe to streaming services like Tidal or Qobuz, which are global, they all offer 96 kilohertz, 24-bit sound. So you can stream it because the bandwidth is there now. We've got that. You can listen to it on, you know, mobile devices even. So I think, you know, the days of 64K MP3 files are very numbered. I feel very sorry for people who digitized thousands of albums in the early days of MP3 because they've got a real pile of crap there. And, it's not, I mean, also, I have to say, it does concern me slightly. There is research showing that young people actually, some of them prefer the very crunchy kind of angular sound of an MP3 to uncompressed music, which is sad, I think. Yeah. I mean, that probably is just because they've got used to it and it's, you know, how they grow up hearing music.
Yeah.
But I hope that they'll grow out of that because it is a great joy. There's no doubt high-definition sound has transformed the music industry. And in fact, you know, there's an even bigger transformation coming with spatial sound.
Yes.
Dolby Atmos and the Sony system, which are going to slug it out over the next few years, like VHS and Betamax did. Who knows who's going to win that one? Sony lost that war, but they'll be pretty ardent about this one. But spatial sound is certainly going to be a really big game changer. You can listen to it in ordinary headphones now even. So I think, you know, it's the future has never been more exciting for audio.
Yeah.
And there are many, many innovative things happening which are, you know, going to make a huge difference to all of us in our daily lives.
As a music fan, what was the first live concert you saw that really blew you away?
First gig I ever went to blew me away. It was Lou Reed just after he left the Velvet Underground.
Wow.
Playing in a tiny club in a suburb of London called Croydon. There were about 80 people there.
Wow.
And it was great. And he played a lot of, you know, a lot of the stuff you would hope he would play in those days. So, yeah, that was a good start to my concert-going career,
I'd say so. Yeah. What was your favorite show that you've seen, one of the most memorable live music shows?
Kate Bush, a couple of years ago at Hammersmith Odeon. I was lucky enough to I had to go for the hospitality package, which cost an absolute arm and a leg because I accessed the ballot for tickets and it sold out in like a minute or a minute and a half or something. But eventually we managed to get two seats in the hospitality, and they were good seats because it was very expensive. And I don't regret a penny of that money. It was one of the best nights of my life. I mean, she was absolutely unbelievable. I love her music anyway. The show was brilliant, and it was an honor actually to be there.
So of all the musicians alive on the planet right now, who would you love to interview, talk to, be around?
Who would I?
Yeah.
Brian Eno. I have a huge respect for everything that he's done. And he, you know, he keeps popping up on albums I love and I didn't even know he'd produced.
It
is extraordinary how many of them there are. You go, I had no idea that Eno produced that. So him, definitely. Jacob Collier is somebody who at the moment I'm really enjoying. He tends to go off and get a bit clever for the sake of it from time to time. I mean, he's probably the greatest musical genius since Mozart, I should think. If anybody doubts that statement, have a look at YouTube and just check out and, you know, look at what Herbie Hancock and Quincy Jones think of him as well. His understanding of harmony is extraordinary. It's superhuman. But he does tend to overcomplicate things a little bit. But there are some songs. I mean, there's a song of his called Make Me Cry, which is excruciatingly beautiful. And, you know, that really does show what he can do.
So what is the motivator for you every day to be who you are and to do your work? What is it that gets you through the day that makes you excel and push yourself?
The world needs listening. And, you know, this job isn't going to finish with me. I just hope I'm inspiring other people to understand the importance of listening for civil society. You know, we can't have democracy and peace if we're unable to live next door to people we disagree with. And if we get into this kind of silo mentality of hating people that we disagree with, that is such a dangerous, slippery slope. You know, at the end of that slope is the ISIS answer, you know, disagree with me and I'll kill you. Well, that's not the world I want my children growing up in.
Yeah.
And the answer to it is listening. It's listening to people we don't agree with. It's validating them. You know, I hear what you say. I really don't agree with you, but I can understand why you think that. It makes sense that you would believe that, given where you come from, what you've had experienced, and so on and so forth. Well, you know, if you validate somebody in that way, you have a chance then to have a communication and interaction which is going to yield some benefit to both of you. You know, who knows? You might even be wrong. And this addiction to being right, I think, is now so dangerous in the world. Making other people wrong and being more righteous in that way, it's a very unfortunate aspect of humanity. And people don't seem to get that, you know, it's possible for two people to have very different views and both be right, if that's the way you want to look at it. So being right doesn't make somebody else wrong every time. You can be right in a different way. And, you know, seeing people as an opportunity to learn in that way maybe is a much more profitable way to exist. So I think we've lost a lot of that. The internet is largely to blame, because it's so easy to go out and just reinforce your entrenched views. There you are, I knew I was right. Thousands agree with me. Yeah, but millions don't. And you're not looking at them. You're not asking them. So I think we've got to be really careful about this whole addiction to being right, to being outraged, at, you know, blaming other people and so forth. It's very dangerous.
Which is why I think podcasting is such a powerful medium and notion right now in our modern society. It really does give, like, you and I, for instance, the chance to get to know each other a little bit and for us to delve more into your world in a very civil, amicable, enriching way for people. And I think this notion's very positive for humanity right now overall.
I hope so. The issue with podcasting, of course, is the proliferation of it, the number of them, and the difficulty of finding the things that are actually going to be good or interesting or fetching for you to listen to. It's all too easy to go and just look for the things you know you're going to like.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's the same issue with music now. There's more music produced in a day than you or I could listen to in a year now. So it becomes one of the most important roles, I think, with the internet in the future is trusted guide. And somebody somewhere, if they haven't done it already, will have a podcast about podcasts and picking out, you know, interesting, challenging, and fascinating podcasts that people ought to try. Even if they don't like them, it's worth trying. Maybe that has happened. I don't know. But if it hasn't, it should.
Well, there's definitely going to be a meta explosion. I have no doubt. Of all of the things that you've accomplished in your life as a TEDx speaker, business owner, a very long career that you've had, what are you the proudest of?
Well, I think my fifth TED Talk was something I really did well. I mean, it's not everybody gets to do five TED Talks. I've done 11 TEDx Talks as well, but five TED Talks. And the fifth one, you know, by that stage, hopefully I'd got reasonably good at doing what I was doing. So it was a very important topic, how to speak so that people want to listen. It was about communication skills. And I did a great job on that stage on that day, which is, you know, any good talk is about content and delivery. And I could have had a great content there and not, and, you know, messed up the delivery, but I nailed it. And yes, that's something I feel very good about, because it's resonated. It's created many ripples in the pond that, you know, that talk's been seen by more than 100 million people. And I hope that it's causing them to be more careful in what they say and in how they listen to others, and having, you know, a significant effect in the world. So, yeah, it's not everybody who gets the chance to do that. And I'm very grateful that I had that opportunity and that I didn't mess it up.
So, of all of the clients that you've helped and served over the years, what's your favorite success story?
I think, well, we did a wonderful job for Harrods in London. It's not installed anymore because Harrods got bought and the whole management team changed and they changed everything. But we did a wonderful job, particularly in the toy store, where before we went in, they had jolly pop music playing everywhere. And very often that's not a very good sound to have. Apart from anything else, some people like it, some people don't. But fast-paced music tends to speed people up. And it was inappropriate. It wasn't really relevant. So, for example, there was a great science fiction toy room where they had all the Star Wars toys and the Star Trek toys and, you know, all that kind of stuff was in there. And it had dark walls. So we installed, there was a big display of a kind of sun. We installed a really kind of fascinating design sound of, you know, what you'd imagine a supernova to be or something like that, that happened every so often. And the background sound in this whole room was what you'd imagine you'd hear if you were on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, a sort of low electronic hum with beeps and bloops happening every so often. So it was a really, exciting room to be in. And the sound in there absolutely was congruent with the visual display. So that kind of thing. I mean, we did a lot more of that kind of stuff throughout Harrods, a lot more. There was a glass department, glass and china, fine glass, crystal department, where again, they had music in there before. And we created a soundscape, which was all made up of the sounds of glass. And if you run your finger around the top of a glass or blow across a glass or just flick it gently, you can make all sorts of wonderful sounds with glass. So we created this gorgeous soundscape that was very enveloping. So you were listening to what you were looking at, which I think was A, beautiful, and B, bound to improve sales compared to the pop music they had in there before. So, yeah, I think that was an award-winning project, and it's probably the one I'm most proud of.
So, Julian, you represent a lot of things to a lot of people, family, friends, clients, colleagues, but you're the one running your life. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Kind, loyal, intelligent, hopefully, very interested in the world and what goes on. Most of all, listening. That I would say that's, you know, it's my passion in life. So I still listen to a lot of music. I don't play it anymore because I live up here in Orkney and there's not that many bands who would want me in them. They're all much younger people. So it's a couple of years since I've played, which I miss. But yes, my family is the most important thing to me. I've got two beautiful young daughters and we are very happy living where we live, enjoying it, being grateful. And being grateful is a huge part of my life. So, you know, I wrote down my values a long time ago, which I do recommend everybody do. You know, there's a lot of people I meet who've never thought about this. What are your values? Oh, I don't know. Well, write them down. Think about them. Mine are faith, love, acceptance, and gratitude. And so easy to remember for me because it spells the word flag. I like a good acronym. And those are the things that are my North Star. So that's what I, you know, faith as in just believing everything is going to be okay, having faith in the future, which sometimes is challenged. You know, AI is scary. Putin is scary. There's a lot of scary stuff in the world right now. But I do have faith that we'll muddle through somehow. Love, as in wishing people well and loving my family. Acceptance of what is. You know, there's no point railing against it. I don't do resentment. I don't do regret. You know, I'm here. You know, a very wise guy once said to me, we start from where we are, which is a very good thing to remember in life. And then gratitude for, you know, really focusing on what I have got, not what I haven't. I think one of the biggest issues with modern life is people believing that happiness is over there, not where I am now. And in fact, happiness is only ever here and now. So that new car, that new house, that new relationship, whatever it is, that's not where happiness is. It's always only ever where you are right now. So that's where gratitude keeps me. So there you are.
Yeah, I like it. So before we close this sonic portal that we've created here, you've made it easy. JulianTreasure.com, thesoundagency.com, any other place that people can go to either get your products, your book, anything about your world, where do they go?
Well, yeah, the books are on the usual places, but swing by JulianTreasure.com. There's a free video on there, which is taking apart my top six of all time TED Talk. It's picked apart by me and a top US speaker coach, and that's fun to look through. And if you want to hear from me, you know, on a regular basis, I've started a newsletter on Substack, which is a platform I really like. You can sign up on JulianTreasure.com or go straight to JulianTreasure.substack.com. So either of those two, it would be great to have people come by.
Julian, this has been great. Thank you so much. We're getting right out the door at the right point. I appreciate it. Before we leave, I want to leave you with a thought. I've interviewed a lot of musicians because I'm in jazz radio that have talked about Miles Davis. The one thing that people may not realize about him that everybody always says about him is that he was an impeccable listener.
Absolutely.
Something to ponder.
Thank you.
Bye, Julian. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning into another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, business, spirituality, music, and more from around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, you can visit Famous Interviews with Joe Domino channel on YouTube. Find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.